The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
Well, and the regular season has finally concluded, and we are well into the postseason. This is the Ain't No Fang Podcast. I'm Steve Zinsmeister with Derek Montilla and Cody Fincher as well. Let's start Diamondbacks as we wrap up the disappointing 60-game 2020 season. Guys, it didn't go the way that we thought. I think all of us had the Diamondbacks at least as the second-best team in this division, with the Dodgers being the obvious number one. One of us even picked the Diamondbacks to be better than the Dodgers. I don't want to point fingers.
Who was that, Steve?
It was not me.
Oh, shut up. You guys all picked them to be second in the division, so you're all just as wrong as I am.
We were all wrong. That's definitely true. Let's talk a little bit about the letdown of the 2020 season, as depressing as that sounds. Derek, run us through your overall thoughts on the 2020 season for the Diamondbacks and give us some of your biggest disappointments.
To be honest, after watching this playoff series begin with the wild card series and having it be a three-game series, I don't really know if I'm as disappointed about what happened with the Diamondbacks as I was 2 weeks ago. I think that if you look at some of these teams and the fact that they were pretty good and they made the playoffs and they had a lot of hype and excitement around it, only for it to end very quickly in a two-game sweep, even in some cases, the teams that were division winners, like the Minnesota Twins, I believe, won their division, and they were ousted by the lower seed, the Houston Astros. So I don't know, man. I think that it was one of those possible steps that the Diamondbacks needed to take in order to actually shed this mediocrity and move forward, even if that means for a period of time that they're very bad, even if it means they're also bad next season, as long as they are taking steps to no longer be a 500 team, to no longer be a team that is just content with making the playoffs. That's the moves that I need to see them make. And I feel at the very least, like when they traded away the parts that they did, as we discussed, that is a step in that direction. Giving these guys a new career potentially somewhere else where they can flourish as well, but also just changing the situation here to possibly increase the success and bring in, you know, new players that might be able to, you know, be less or provide more for this team. You know, I don't know if I'm as, you know, optimistic about the future right now as I even was before this season, but I'm glad to see them bringing up young talent. I'm glad to see them moving in a direction where they're not content with the play of some of this team. I think that this organization at times has been very positive about the outlook of the team, but I don't know if they've been very realistic.
Yeah, on the last podcast, I think it was, I said it was an end of an era and a changing of the guard, so to speak, with the Diamondbacks. And I think you bring up an interesting point that while listening to Derek Hall on the radio, I think it was last week, talking about how the 2021 budget could be dramatically impacted by this year, by the shortened season, we shouldn't expect them to have the same budget next year that they've had this year and years past. So I think I kind of fall under that same category as you, Derek, where you look at next year and you might think, okay, this is kind of going to be a down year. We can maybe expect that. Not to say that they're tanking, but maybe that you bring up a couple more of those young guys. Maybe you move on from a couple of veterans who are, you know, like David Peralta or Eduardo Escobar's in the last year of his deal and is cheap and affordable for another team. So we might see kind of a new direction for the team. We'll get into that here in a second. Bear, run us through some of your biggest disappointments and letdowns from the 2020 season.
Well, the fact that they didn't make the playoffs is number one, especially in this season where the playoffs were expanded as much as they were. We almost had three NL West teams get in, but the Giants couldn't, you know, overcome their difficulties to get in. And I think Milwaukee Brewers ended up being the eighth seed. They're playing the Dodgers.
Almost
right now,
the entire NL Central. Yeah. The exception of the Pirates. And there's five teams in that division.
Yeah.
Or six teams.
So the fact that you couldn't get in with that amount of teams making the playoffs is just a huge disappointment. Do we want to get into specific players? I'll get into specific players.
Yeah, let's do it. Well, Barrett, let me ask you this, really fast.
Jumping in,
and I apologize to jump in, but I just want to say, do the playoffs matter when your team wasn't a real contender? With how good some of the teams are that are in the playoffs right now, does making the playoffs really matter? Is that just a kind of false achievement for your team when they weren't really going to make any noise or do any damage? Or is it just that possibility of something happening?
Well, this year I think it's different because the first round is a best of three series and anything can really happen. The Milwaukee Brewers could win two more games against the Dodgers and the World Series favorites are done. They're done. And we saw what happened with the Reds and the Braves. The Braves couldn't score any runs, and they're done. And they were one of probably the most dangerous, you know, overall teams. They kind of stumbled their way into the playoffs this year, but overall team wise, on paper, they were pretty dangerous. And now they're done. And I would have liked to have seen them get in there just to have a shot. They probably would have played the Dodgers and lost two games, but you never know. Honestly, what could happen, especially if they had ended the season on a high note, on a hot streak going into the playoffs. But honestly, I get what you mean. Like, we go back to 2017 where they won that wild card game and then they got swept by the Dodgers. Like, oh, okay, well, why were we even here?
That's what it felt like. And I mean, like, don't get me wrong, the memories that created and the experience it created for fans and how it kind of probably created new fans and galvanized the team and made them, you know, believe in themselves for the following season. Like, yeah. I get all of that, you know, but I think there's also a fake facade, you know, to your team at that point, because you might just think that they're better than they are, especially in a season where they expanded the playoffs and you wouldn't have made it otherwise.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I just think that I am glad that they now, even though, like, looking at some of the numbers, Jake Lamb still infuriates me. I think that now they've, you know, I've realized that this was, you know, just required steps to free up money in the budget to try to bring in new players. Mike Hazen had his final media appearance or press conference the other day. And, you know, he talked about how he doesn't know how active this team will be in the offseason. He says, in his opinion, he always thought that every offseason wasn't going to be very active. And according to other people and not his own opinion, we've been tremendously active in the offseason, which I feel is a fair assessment for
The
Diamondbacks have done under Hazen, right? So Hazen said maybe, you know, being active is just a personality trait of his. And he doesn't know any better. You know, mm-hmm. I like that, though, because he's going to continue to make moves to make this team better. I feel like everything they have done has made this team better, with the exception, possibly, of the Bumgarner deal. We still haven't seen how this played out. We haven't seen Bumgarner in a, you know, whole season. Bear did get what he wanted.
I did.
Bear got not just not quality starts, but good starts. But you got two good starts out of him. And I think that that was very promising for the future. I think the way this team played down the stretch was promising. The management was very optimistic about the future. And Mike Hazen didn't seem frazzled in any way by the way things went down. He did admit that he's not going to watch the playoffs because it's very hard for him. He's sitting in an open, empty baseball stadium right now that doesn't have any baseball going on in it, and he's expected to watch these other teams fight for a chance at the World Series. That kind of passion I appreciate. It also kind of carried over to Torey Lovullo during his press conference, talking about how he, you know, felt in ways like maybe his attitude and such this season affected the team. And he felt like he just wasn't himself at times because of this whole pandemic COVID situation, where he can't go up and be all hands on with people, where he gives people hugs and daps people up and high fives and all of that. It was very hard for him. And at times he seemed to blame himself for that coming across. He did say he talked to several of the players, and the players didn't at any time feel that coming from him, but he definitely expressed some, you know, concern over his attitude and the way things were. you know, kind of look over it at the way that this season went, and it was a frustrating year. And Lovullo got thrown out more times this year collectively than he had his entire career leading up to this season. So you could tell that there were some frustrations there with him. And you could tell that there were times where he was trying to do some things to motivate the team and get him fired up. It just was hard. And this particular season, they seemed overwhelmed. It seemed like there were just too many parts that weren't working. You know, they're not concerned though, because I feel like they, you know, even though there are certain parts that weren't the typical Diamondbacks baseball, they kind of feel like those were more of an abnormality rather than being indicative of what this team is going to be, especially defensively. They were pretty bad defensively this year. Yeah. Like Nick Ahmed and other guys that usually are just solid as a rock defensively weren't that for them this season. You can never really know how much this entire situation pandemic wise played in to the failures of this team and their lack of success. The one thing that Hazen and Lovullo will always admit to, though, is they didn't go through anything that the other teams playing right now didn't also go through. Mm-hmm. So they're not using that as an excuse. They're just saying at times when they have to look at the situation, they can't really make a whole bunch of, you know, knee-jerk reaction decisions to the situation based on just how weird the season was. I do think that they did part ways with people that they probably should have, with the exception of Starling Marte, you know, and at the very least, his trade produced the most in return, and his trade was the one we were technically happy with, who they got back. But it still doesn't mean that there's times where I really wish that they just would have held on to him based on how good he's been and how good he could still be for this team. By the way, I don't know if we've discussed this, but the Diamondbacks did acquire Julio Frias from the Marlins to complete that trade. Which he was the player to be named later.
Gotcha. No, I think you're right that the pandemic did mess up the timeline of the season, because if you look at it, really the way I think of this season is it wasn't just a bad season for the Diamondbacks. It was a bad first 3-4 weeks, because realistically you had to change your entire team based on the first month of the season because of where the trade deadline was, you know, where it came up on the calendar. Bear, right. List some of the most disappointing players for us this season.
Let's do it. Let's start with Madison Bumgarner, yep. Who signed a 5-year, $85 million deal this offseason. He finished the year, and he was hurt for a good portion of the season. He finished the season 1-4 with a 6.48 ERA. 1.44 whip. He only struck out 30 guys in 41 2/3 innings. And as you guys remember, all year we have been wondering where the velocity was, all that stuff. And yeah, I was hoping, obviously, for more from their ace that they acquired this offseason. Honestly, I think the shutdown in spring training really affected him. I'm not sure how he spent the time, the 2 months or so, 3 months when after spring training got shut down before the start of the summer camp. But I think this guy is probably used to his routine and what he does year after year. And this kind of threw everything off. So to start with, Madison Bumgarner is okay. One of my most top whatever disappointment
top
of D-backs.
Worst
yeah.
players
yes
top worst but I'll jump in. I'd like to add in that Eduardo Escobar was yes. a pretty okay. big disappointment.
Yes.
I think mostly because, again, we didn't get to see him get out of this initial funk that we've talked about,
right?
Just career wise he's always kind of had a slow start, so we never got to see him get out of it. But at one point he was hitting below 200.
Mm-hmm.
He ended the season with a 212 batting average. I think the thing that really concerned me the most was he seemed like he really was enjoying hitting at Chase Field last season, and his numbers at home have been atrocious. And he only hit 4 home runs in this short season compared to the 35 that he hit last year. And I mean, he played in 54 of the 60 games, so it's not like he didn't have ample opportunity to, you know, kind of get going.
I
don't know.
Another aspect with Escobar that I was disappointed in, and Torrey Lovullo recently addressed this, but with the media, that Eduardo Escobar showed up to summer camp out of shape. He had added some pounds over the shutdown and the quarantine 15 or whatever you want to call it. And
too much FOGO power.
Yeah. You know? And to be honest with you, I know he had a health scare this off season where he passed out randomly in his home in Venezuela. He just, especially during the very beginning of the season, it kind of went away as the season went on, but it seemed like he was too concerned. I'm not going to fault him for being concerned about COVID-19, but I remember that first series against the Padres where he came up and he had his mask on at home plate, fine. Then the next appearance, it was at his chin, then it was at his neck, and then in the field, it was over his nose. I just felt like he wasn't focused on baseball, at least to start the year. And then Lovello admitting that there was... It was addressed with Eduardo Escobar about his physical condition, that he showed up out of shape at summer camp. And so I don't know of how focused he really was on playing baseball. And that's disappointing because we all know what he could do. He was really good last year. He's usually a run producer and a home run hitter, and he drives the ball. And this year it just looked like, and it could be because he put on some pounds, his bat speed wasn't there. And that's disappointing to me because this guy is – we were counting on Eduardo Escobar to be kind of that, you know, besides David Peralta, let's say that engine to the D-backs offense, yeah. Besides Ketel Marte and David Peralta.
Yeah. I mean, it's his on-base percentage was .270.
Terrible. Like, terrible.
That's what we expected out of him, was to be that kind of on-base guy for, you know, to be driven in runs-wise.
Yeah.
And I don't know, because you bring up an interesting thing that I haven't thought of, but I just wonder the mindset of some of the guys, and I'm not accusing Escobar of this, but I just wonder if some of the guys didn't think that this season was going to happen.
Or at least it wouldn't finish.
Right. One way or the other, you know, yeah. when talks got really, when things seemed like they were really far apart in like June, at the end of June, when we were close to when it was supposed to start, and then things just seemed like they were falling apart. I wonder how many baseball players legitimately just mentally went into the offseason,
yeah.
You know, just went into the offseason and weren't, you know, doing the things that they needed to do. And also, I don't understand how someone from management staff hasn't gone down to the Fogo de Chao Brazilian Steakhouse in Scottsdale and put a picture of him up saying, do not let this man in. Okay. I'm just saying, if you take away his favorite thing and tell him he can't have it until he raises his OPS above 700, then you can have Fogo de Chao again. You know, that's what I'm saying. Incentivize.
Yeah. Yes. Incentive laden contracts.
Steve,
yeah.
Do you have anyone who you were... Any player that you had most disappointed?
You know, it's not a player.
Okay.
But I've been more players. Highly disappointed in the bullpen.
Mm. I have written down right here.
The bullpen.
Entire bullpen besides besides Stefan Crichton.
Yeah.
Literally,
yeah.
I have that written down.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And listen, they traded
and
their
Alex
closer.
Young.
Yeah, fair
I
enough.
I actually have him on my display.
They traded their closer, Archie Bradley, who was... far and away their most talented pitcher, although I don't want to make it out to be that Archie Bradley is this amazing reliever. I don't think he ever reached that point. Yoan Lopez got sent down in the first couple of weeks of the season. That was weird. I still don't know the answer to why that happened. So I just didn't feel like they progressed at all. And again, it's hard to progress in a short season when you trade away your only good reliever.
Yeah.
But they went out and added a couple of guys who are veterans, like Rondon, who has closing experience minimally, but mm-hmm. he still has it.
Mm-hmm.
They added Guerra. They added guys that made you feel confident that they were major league ready. Like, they had a bunch of dudes.
Rondon has done that before. Guerra, like you said.
Right.
Yeah.
They had Chafin at the time, who mm-hmm. I know, again, they ended up trading him. But I just felt like they went from having a medium, maybe a little bit below average bullpen to now I don't know that they have a single good pitcher.
Yeah.
I mean, Crichton played well, but I don't know that he's going to be solid going forward.
He's definitely not going to be their closer going
right.
forward. I mean,
so I really don't. And if you're not going to make a lot of moves in the offseason, I don't know what that bullpen looks like next year.
I have.
That was, go that ahead, was Derek. Number one, by the way, on Mike Hazen's list of things that
bullpen,
he wanted to address.
Yes.
It has to
bullpen.
Be. Yes. Because they don't have anything.
He felt like starting pitching still needed to be addressed, but bullpen was the first thing he brought up.
Hmm.
And then he also brought up right-handed bats.
Yes.
That they don't have enough right-handed bats.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's true.
Those were his top three as far as acquisitions for the offseason.
I'll give you two more players that I have written down. I have, okay. I have a couple more. One guy I thought needed to take a step forward this year and didn't was Carson Kelly. Carson Kelly, I mean, he had a good year last year, you know, just coming on. But this year, man, I was hoping he'd take that next step because he's, you know, he's the guy now. He's the guy behind the plate. 221 batting average, only five home runs. And get this. In 129 plate appearances, he only walked six times.
Oh.
That's bad.
That's not good.
That's not good plate vision. That's a guy that's swinging at a lot of junk and not getting on base. So I was disappointed in him with that. And then another guy who also came over in the Paul Goldschmidt trade with Carson Kelly that I thought really needed to take a step forward this year was Luke Weaver. And he had a terrible 2020. The record, 1-9. 1-9 record with a 6.58 ERA, a 1.55 whip. He gave up six. It's not even that he walked a bunch of guys. 63 hits in 52 innings pitched. Not good. He struck out a decent amount. He struck out more than his innings pitched. But, man, I was really disappointed in Luke Weaver because after he got injured last year, he came back and looked pretty good. And, you know, he should have been that number four starter, that the solid number four in this rotation behind what should have been. I mean, in an ideal world, Madison Bumgarner, Zach Gallen, Robbie Ray, Luke Weaver. It turned out that Robbie Ray was terrible, so it was Mad Bum, and Zach Gallen is amazing, and we love him, and he's the ace.
Yeah.
And
that has worked
and
out.
And Luke Weaver nothing happened with injuries. He was just not good.
How many bright spots have there been on this team?
Gallen is one. Gallen, Merrill Kelly was pitching really well before he got injured.
Yeah, but he only did it. I'm not trying to poo-poo it. He was really, really good. One of the best in baseball, but he only did it for like a month.
I would say, I mean, I know the production wasn't there, but David Peralta finished at 300 batting average
this
year.
Which is around where a little above where he normally is.
Yeah. Cole Calhoun was Cole Calhoun. The batting average is pretty low, but he hit home runs.
Did great.
Yeah, and he plays
what we expected.
He plays a really good right field. So, I mean, he came as advertised, Cole Calhoun,
sure.
I think.
Okay.
I will say one thing, another thing about Carson Kelly that kind of bothered me for this team is the team's walks allowed. The numbers for this team across the board were incredible, and they finished the season as the fifth most walks allowed, just behind Texas, Pittsburgh, Toronto, and Boston, which is not good company to be in as far as that goes. But I think it just goes to show, like, it's questionable sometimes to me when there's that many walks allowed across the board for the team. Like, there's got to be something pitching coach wise or catcher wise that's kind of up.
Yeah.
If everybody's allowing that many walks.
Yeah. Know? There's going to be some changes there, I would say. The last thing I would say that was a pretty decent disappointment for me, not to say that he had a horrible year, but going into the season, we talked about how Ketel Marte was going to have to prove for a second year in a row that he was the level of player he was in 2019. I'm not going to say it was a complete anomaly in 2019 because he was a top 5 to 10 player in the league statistically, all while splitting time pretty evenly between center field and second base last year. Made his all-star team last year. Again, one of the better players in the game. And coming into this year, the question wasn't whether or not he was talented, it was whether or not he can put it all together again. I'm not going to say he didn't. I think we still all believe he is the best player on the Diamondbacks, at least in their lineup. But to not see him be that elite level player that he was last year, I won't say disheartening, but a little bit concerning because I know that they want to build the team around him going forward. He's on an affordable deal for a significant amount of period of time. So I'd like to see more out of Ketel Marte, if that's fair.
It's not fair. I think you're being completely unreasonable. He almost hit 300 this season. I just think that the team was bad around him. He didn't have the same power, similar as Escobar. It seemed like power-wise that both of those guys just had an incredible season last year.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure if we'll see that again, right? Like, when you especially look at, like, Escobar's numbers, I remember at one point when he hit 100 RBI last season, we as reporters were asking him, like, hey, what's going on? And he was like, I don't know. You know, like, he wasn't like, yeah, this is, you know, me, or like, I feel really good, or nothing like that. He legitimately seemed last season like he had no idea how he was able, and he ended up with 118 RBI, which was a career high for him. His next highest year was 84. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, his RBI in 2019 was off the charts. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think both of those guys just had a crazy season last year, and I don't know if we'll see them get back to those same numbers.
Also, in defense of Ketel Marte, he had that wrist injury, and we didn't really get any clarity as how long he was dealing with it. And I know that could, you know, obviously affect power numbers. I remember one year when, I don't remember what year it was, but Justin Upton had that thumb injury, and the dude couldn't drive the ball at all. So anything like that, I'm not sure. I'll give you another bright spot. Christian Walker had a pretty decent year. He hit .271, 7 home runs, 34 RBIs, and continued to play a good first base. I wonder what you do at first base now. He's 29. He's not young, I guess.
But still in his prime.
He's still in his prime years, but I wonder just what they do now with Mike Hazen. If you remember, Derek, I think he addressed that they would like to get some more power from the corner infield spots.
He did say that.
So I wonder what he means by that. Is that an Escobar thing? Is that if the DH is here to stay, is that maybe moving Walker to DH and getting another first baseman? I don't know. I'm not sure what's going to be out there either.
They're very cryptic at times, and that's one thing I've learned this season, is to not trust anything they say most of the time. Like, because they have no problem coming back 2 weeks later and being like, yeah, we had to lie to you guys
about
that. Right. We're like, hey, what? Hey, come on. Like, you have to still lie to us. Why are you just being truthful now? You know? One bright spot I will say that I particularly enjoyed, as you guys know, and it's not reflected in his numbers, but Dalton Varsho, just for what he was able to do. I think some of these young guys like Pavin Smith and Varsho were kind of called upon at a point in their career where you might consider it to be detrimental, mm-hmm. just because it's this quick advancement to the major league level for both of these guys.
Yeah.
And honestly, I felt like they both immediately struck me as being fully capable of being at a major league level. Varsho hit under 200 with a .188 batting average, but do you guys remember that time he bunted against the shift?
Yes, Derek, we know.
You're still talking about that?
So good. I really liked him for that. And he hit 3 home runs.
Just imagine what his batting average would be if he didn't do that.
Oh, yeah, totally. It'd be like .180. They have a good player in him, I think, that's very versatile, and I think that he's going to continue to get better.
Do you see his future in center field?
I honestly see his future as being like a utility bench player for right now.
Okay.
I don't even know if they're going to send him back down to the minor leagues, because I think that they might see that value in him next year, but who knows? You don't want a guy like that who's still young and still developing riding the bench, which is the purpose of the minor leagues existing. So I don't know. I think that he has to look at his career. I would like to see him as catcher. You know, I honestly would think that there's still a big opening at catcher. I think it's not something the Diamondbacks, like we talked about, have, a great options at right now. And he could definitely add something to this team. I don't know if his, you know, if they're looking at him that way, but I think whatever the team has kind of told him is what he needs to be working on if he's going to be back down to the minors next year. You know, like, directly working on being back up. I'm sure they'll call him back up next season at some point. Mm-hmm. So if he's going to be an outfielder, then let's get him down that path now. I don't want to see him as like a utility player that just kind of gets moved around and fills in for starters when they're taking their day off.
I don't want him to become Chris Owings.
Yeah.
Because I think that was what I don't know. I never talked to Chris Owings. I don't know anything about it. But just for me, just a hunch is that Chris Owings was at one point the everyday second baseman, everyday middle infielder somewhere. And then all of a sudden they tried to make him this super utility guy that can play anywhere on the field. And I think learning all those positions affected his hitting. And he just became this guy who couldn't hit. I don't know that for sure. It's just a hunch I've always had ever since they came in and tried to do that with Chris Owings. But I hope they don't do that with Dalton Varsho. If they, like you're saying, Derek, if they want him to be a catcher, play him at catcher, please. If they want him to be a utility outfielder, then no more catcher. That's just especially you don't want the wear and tear of playing catcher to affect a guy you want to play in the outfield, an athletic guy like him that you want to play in the outfield all the time.
Well, and it's one thing to spend your time practicing left field and center field. You know, like they're pretty similar in how you handle things. It's just a different part of the ballpark.
Whereas catching, you have to worry about all your pitchers, all the stuff they throw,
game planning,
the pitch selection, calling a baseball game,
right.
There's so much that goes into playing catcher.
Well, so here, I'll ask you this, Derek, because I think it was you who mentioned that Varsho was one of those guys who got maybe an early call-up. Maybe we wouldn't have seen Andy Young in a regular season. There are plenty of other
guys.
Probably not. So who is that guy next year if this is, in fact, going the direction we think this organization might be, which is not making significant upgrades in the offseason, not spending a lot of money? They're going to need to do it through the farm system, potentially. Who could be that young player that gets a call-up maybe a little bit earlier than we anticipated because they need to fill holes?
You know exactly who it is, Steve. It's Christian Robinson.
Okay.
Oh.
Isn't he 19?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to call up a 19 or a 20-year-old?
Didn't they put him on the 60-man roster this year?
They did.
They did.
Right. Right. So he could be at the alternate training site. I'm just saying, if things go this same way this next season, then it's merely about getting him playing time, and it's merely about getting him experience. It's not letting someone like that sit and just have to do simulated games and training and practice at the alternate site facility, which is Salt River Fields. That's really good, you know, and I think that that's one thing that isn't said. I understand that they go through a lot of development while being in the, you know, in the minor league system, in the farm system, but to be able to work with coaches and such at the major league facility at a major league level and gain that experience earlier in their career than they would have otherwise, I don't know if that's such a bad thing, especially with the alternate training site and the way it's set up. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see him next season is my point. I was honestly surprised to see the guys we saw this season. Pavin Smith, that surprised me, you know, and to see him actually not just put on the 60-man roster, but eventually put into a game where he started and to be present for that game. I was like, who is P. Smith? What? that was my reaction to seeing him on the
right
card. But yeah, I mean, it was good. And I don't know what this does for anybody. I think it's to each own player's development. I think that there's a proven system, which is why they go through it the way they do. And I think it is going to be difficult on some of these younger guys. I'm not sure how it's going to play out for their careers. I'm sure there are going to be some guys who are affected negatively by the way this whole situation goes. I just have a hard time now not expecting players to like suck it up and figure it out. Right.
Yeah.
And it sounds mean, but I blame David Peralta. David Peralta was a pitcher who turned himself into a gold glove outfielder and
who hits 300.
who hits 300. I know not everybody can make that exact same transition, but I feel like, you know, there's a lot of good work to be done when you can work with major league, you know, training staff and major league level coaching.
I think one of the guys you're going to see next year get called up is a guy they just acquired this year. I think Stuart Fairchild's going to get called up at some point. He's sitting at number 13 on their top 30 prospects, according to MLB.com. He's 24 years old. You got to see what you have in him, right? I mean,
what's his primary position?
It just says outfielder.
Okay. No, I guess my question is, does he play center field? Because that is the blatant hole that you have in your lineup. I mean, you have guys at every position for the most part, right? I mean, they have a catcher in Carson Kelly. They have first base in Christian Walker. Ketel Marte. Nick Ahmed is signed to a longer deal now. Eduardo Escobar, although he is on a one-year deal. You have David Peralta. You have Cole Calhoun. So really, center field is your biggest hole because you filled that hole in the offseason by trading for Starling Marte and moving Ketel to second base. Now with Starling gone, center field seems to be the big hole. We've talked about Varsho as an option, but four of their top prospects are outfielders. You have Alec Thomas, who's hit at every level in the minor leagues. You have Corbin Carroll, who could be, he's a Mike Hazen draft pick, who could make an early appearance at the major league level. Christian Robinson, I don't know if he plays center, but he's certainly a guy capable of playing at the major league level. So I don't know. I guess I'm kind of answering my own question to Derek about who it could be. I expect it'll probably be an outfielder, but also the bullpen, as bad as it may appear to be right now, could end up being a proving ground for young pitchers. We could see the expediting of young pitchers, too.
I'd like to see some of the guys they got in the Zach Greinke trade, like Corbin Martin and J.B. Bukauskas.
Sure.
To come up and
they're
and
good
pitch.
Picks to get I don't know if I call that expediting.
Not expedited, but
because they're a little bit older.
Guys, yeah, especially because we don't really know what's going to happen this offseason. We don't know. Right. I mean, the one thing we do know from what Mike Hazen and Derek Hall have said, that it's probably more likely than not that they're not going to be spending a lot of money this offseason. I mean, they may make some trades, and as Derek said, Mike Hazen was saying that he likes to be active. Being active in the offseason is just kind of his nature, but so we might see some trades, but honestly, like, it doesn't seem like they're going to be big spenders this offseason, so they might just have to fill their holes with guys that they already have in their system.
Let's move
on. I'll say
this. Okay, go
ahead. Wait, I do want to say Mike Hazen did bring up that Corbin Martin, he brought his name up just as part of the starting rotation.
Mm. Really?
Okay.
He did. He was talking about the future of the starting rotation,
okay.
And he was talking about the current players, and then at the end, he just threw in Corbin Martin's name as an additional player.
That might not be so surprising because he's missed time because of injury, not because he wasn't ready.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's interesting.
That might be, you know, where their focus is as far as, you know, their pitching staff and going forward. They might not add to it, but
yeah.
I think they're going to keep it open enough that if something comes up, if they can make a deal happen, they will.
Be interesting to see where Caleb Smith factors in to all this as well, because it seemed like he got starts at the end of the season, but they usually didn't last very long. And then there's the kid, Humberto Mejia, that they also got in the Starling Marte trade.
I like him a lot.
Yeah, he could project into the rotation as well. So it's kind of it'll be interesting to see what they do. Merrill Kelly should be back next year, hopefully.
Who apparently is really good now.
Yeah. I mean,
or at least was for a month or
so
two.
It'll be interesting to see because now, I mean, if you just want to keep everything as is, they really only have one spot to fill in the rotation, technically, with Bumgarner, Gallen, Weaver, and then if Kelly is back in time for the start of next year, you have just one spot to fill. So it'll be kind of interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, definitely.
Marlins, speaking of which, will be going for the 2-game sweep of the Cubs in the playoffs tomorrow.
Yeah, let's talk playoffs a little bit about what's already gone on. And I want to get your guys' World Series picks before we get too deep into the playoffs. But Derek, biggest takeaways so far in the playoffs as we are about, I would say, halfway through the first round.
I think anything can happen. I think that's the thing that really strikes me with the playoffs. I like this structure. I think that the 3 games is a pretty quick out. I don't think it's an advantage for anybody that went through the season like the Dodgers did and dominated record-wise. I think that part kind of sucks for some of these teams because even though they get the series to happen at their home ballpark, home field advantage isn't really what it used to be with no fans in the stands. And honestly, you look at what happened to some of these teams like the Minnesota Twins, who were one of the best teams in baseball this year, but once again flopped in the playoffs and are you know, swept by the Astros in 2 games.
They've lost 18 straight playoff games, the Minnesota Twins.
When does that date back to?
18 playoff games ago. I don't know.
Like what year?
I don't know.
A lot. Because they haven't made the playoffs. Like,
well, for a while there, they were always facing the Yankees at the height of their powers in like the wild
card
series.
That's never good for
series.
An organization. Yeah,
yeah, and sure. They were just never won.
Right.
So
okay,
back before there was an single game elimination wild card,
which I hate.
Yeah, you hate
the Reds. Didn't score a single run in their 2-game loss to the Braves.
Yep,
and the Yankees steamrolled over Steve's Indians there.
Yeah, I'm from Cleveland originally, and the Indians are my team. And I'll tell you, honest truth, I was really looking forward to that Shane Bieber, Garrett Cole matchup.
Oh, yeah, it should be
great. That's the best pitcher from this season versus the best pitcher from last season. Mm-hmm. And it just went sideways for the Indians. And it happens. I get it. The Yankees have an imposing lineup. They're deep. They have a guy at the front end of the rotation who is just as good as you can possibly imagine being. So the Yankees are dangerous for sure. I'll ask you guys this. What are your World Series picks as of right now?
Go ahead, Derek.
My World Series picks is Dodgers versus Yankees.
Okay.
That's also mine. Wow.
It seems like the popular choice.
Yeah. I think
it's watching them now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's seeing what they're doing now in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't take for granted some of these other teams, but at the same time too, they seem pretty dominant. I think the White Sox also look really good.
Yeah, they're a sleeper.
I think they're in a tough series with the A's that they could end up coming out on top here, which is currently happening, and they are up 1-0 in the bottom of the second. So I would say White Sox or Yankees coming out of the AL.
I also say that as well. I think both those teams will probably make it to the World Series, but I think there's a chance that whoever wins this Cardinals-Padres series could have a chance to beat the Dodgers in the next round. Whoever wins this series plays the Dodgers next. San Diego is dangerous. I mean, their pitching staff, though, is depleted. They don't have Dinelson Lamet or Mike Clevinger right now. And Chris Paddock was terrible yesterday. And the Cardinals just have this playoff pedigree thing with their organization.
They step it up, right?
Yeah, whenever
like
they get
crazy.
Exactly. Like they're a decent team, but then when they get in the playoffs, just this extra gear kicks in. I don't know what it is, but they have a chance to beat the Padres. Paul Goldschmidt hit a home run yesterday, so that was cool.
Jake Cronenworth has been a valuable part of the Padres, but he was showing his, you know, his playoff nerves, you know, in that first game. I'm surprised by that because the Padres have been so hot this season. If they lose that series, I think that would be a surprise. And at this point, the Twins losing to the Astros were a bit of a surprise. And the Marlins, if they could pull off the upset over the Cubs, that'd probably be one of the biggest shocks of the playoffs, I think.
I think the Rays also have a really good chance of making it to the World Series as well. They're just a top-to-bottom, really solid team.
Well, here's my thing with the Rays.
They'll be playing the Yankees, by the way, in the next round.
My thing with the Rays is I don't see anybody in that lineup when I look at it that I'm like, oh, I am scared of that dude.
No, you wouldn't.
But then when you put all the pieces together, like it doesn't look like that great of a team on paper.
They're kind of what the Diamondbacks were striving to be this year, I feel like, right? Where there's not that super star Mike Trout hitter, you know, Nolan Arenado.
I mean, Cattell
in your lineup
kind of was
sure,
but
okay,
but no,
from top,
but not
from,
like that.
From top
not
to
opposing.
Right, from top to bottom, the lineup should scare you from 1 through 9, you know what I mean,
like the Dodgers.
Yeah,
they're scary.
Well,
they're loaded
when
with
you add
stars.
When you add a guy like Mookie freaking Betts,
yeah,
and then oh my gosh, ugh.
You know, one thing I didn't like listening to Lavolo at times when he talked about his game plan was it was too often that he wanted to play small ball. And I understand the concept there, right?
Yeah.
Like their thought is that you can really get to an opposing pitcher by loading the bases and just singling him to death, just RBI single after RBI single, and just keep that merry-go-round going instead of like going for power. But at times when he would say that, it just sounded insane to me because I was like, you know, you sound like Alex Rodriguez talking about how hitting grand slams isn't a good thing or whatever, right?
Yeah.
On air, right?
That's stupid.
It's just like, I don't know what your game plan here is, but, you know, having a guy that's going to clear the bases and bring in all four runs at once is pretty good, too.
All right. You guys are going Yankees, Dodgers.
Yeah. What are you doing?
I'm going to go White Sox. And it's not just because Derek talked me into it. but I think to me, when you have the guy who I think should be winning MVP this year in Jose Abreu, Tim Anderson has been phenomenal. I don't know how he figured out how to hit the way he has this year, but he just did. Eloy Jimenez is a stud. I've loved him for a long time as a prospect.
Luis Robert. Monster.
Luis Robert, of course, is a super
prospect.
By
the way, Luis Robert, if you guys didn't see in this game going on right now against the A's, he hit a 487-foot home run.
Of course he did.
Oh, my God.
Of course he did. The guy's a monster. And he plays center field.
It's 1-0 White Sox right now after two innings.
The other thing that convinced me about that, too, is their team has really, really good young starting pitching. And this season, all of a sudden, Lucas Giolito turned into the guy that we thought he was going to be when he was a prospect in Washington, right?
Yeah.
He finally came through this year. And I'm not just talking about the no-hitter. I'm talking about all of a sudden, every time he's out there, he's dominant. And so if he can continue to be that player for them, that gives you a guy that goes at least twice in the World Series, if not three times. So I'll take the White Sox.
What about the NL?
They get there. NL is Dodgers. I think if you don't pick the Dodgers, then you're just guessing. You know what I mean? And we're all kind of guessing.
That's kind of what I did. I'm like, yeah, the Dodgers are probably going to make it, but here's a team that could beat them.
Like
kind of thing.
If you pick somebody other than the Dodgers, you're just going against like the obvious best lineup. So
yes.
I'll play the.
That's
obvious
what I did earlier in the season when we did that thing.
Yeah,
I
remember.
You brought it up earlier.
Yeah. No. Unfortunately for Diamondbacks fans, I think you have to pick the Dodgers. But again, this is a weird year. You guys both said it at different times throughout this podcast. Anything can happen. So we're going to keep a close eye on that, and we'll keep you
posted.
It's
fun to root against them, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's always fun. to root against them.
I was so happy last year when Howie Kendrick hit that grand slam. Oh my gosh. I was more happy than I was at all during a D-backs game.
Right?
In the past couple years.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's call it a wrap on the Diamondbacks season 2020. A down year. Let's call it a down year. Let's see how 2021 goes. But we're going to keep a close eye on the MLB postseason as it progresses without the Diamondbacks, unfortunately. And we'll keep you up to speed on all things going on in the playoffs next week. I'm Steve Zinsmeister with Derek Montilla and Cody Fincher as well. We thank you so much for listening to the Ain't No Fang podcast here at ArizonaSports.com and on the Arizona Sports app.